It's a promo for live sessions.
Oh, yeah. CFRC live sessions. Thursdays at 11 a.m.
Listen to sexy bands play live on air and hear exclusive interview highlights.
Sounds awesome. Tune in on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Lit. Okay. Peace out, dude.
See you Thursday.
Broadcasting 24/7, 365, you're listening to 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca, Kingston's only campus community radio station. Tune in for the best local programming.
Good evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's news collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Henry Walker, and Ellie MacArthur. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. University Hospitals Kingston Foundation, which supports both Kingston Health Sciences Center and Providence Care, is currently leading a landmark fundraising campaign, with anonymous local donors matching community donations by up to $100,000. The Double Your Donation Matching Gift Challenge runs until the end of the year, with matched gifts supporting the most pressing needs across both Kingston Health Sciences Center and Providence Care. Jeff Donner, Director of Marketing and Communications with UHKF, shared more about the Matching Gift Challenge with CFRC.
A matching gift challenge is powerful because it turns one person's generosity into something bigger. Every gift goes a little bit further instantly because of that matching element. And this time of year really highlights how deeply people in Kingston care about one another, especially when it comes to healthcare, especially knowing that we're entering into a very important era of healthcare in the city of Kingston and beyond.
As Donner mentioned, local healthcare is at a pivotal moment, with local hospitals facing evolving demands and major projects on the horizon.
I think what's new this year is the intentionality behind the campaign. Mm-hmm. The news is definitely out there that land has been put aside for a new hospital and innovation complex. More news to come on that, obviously. But I think the most important takeaway from that is it reinforces how important investment in healthcare is for our region, particularly as we face a very large capital project that will take many, many years to complete. This is sort of our first foray into that type of landscape.
The funds raised through this challenge will also help hospitals respond to today's realities, including growing patient volumes, increasingly complex care needs, and the need for new technologies. From modern equipment and innovative treatments to staff support and system-wide improvements, the campaign helps turn community generosity into direct impact. Lori Fagiani, Director of Engagement and Sustainability with UHKF, emphasized that this is truly a community-driven effort, with donations staying local and directly supporting care close to home.
One of the nice things with working with the foundation is that the funds that we do raise through all of our campaigns and all of the different ways that we raise funds do stay local. So they are here and they are helping our friends, our families, our neighbors. The money that we raise is going to help, you and your family. So that's a really important issue, that knowing that donor donations stay right here in Kingston to help our own community.
Donors can contribute through one-time or recurring gifts by visiting uhkf.ca/give. Once again, gifts made by December 31st, 2025 will be matched dollar for dollar by anonymous local donors, up to $100,000.
Hospitals don't slow down during the holiday. In many ways, needs increase. Community support during this season sends a powerful message to healthcare teams that they're not alone. And I think that's really the spirit of the campaign that we're trying to share with the public is we're here for you. And we invite your support to be here for one another as well through donation and through your participation in our holiday campaign. every gift helps strengthen care across our hospitals.
Yeah. I was just going to say, it doesn't matter the size of the gift. It's the support. And this is the biggest, this is the season of giving. And so big, small, your donations are all greatly appreciated. Again, they will go to support local health care right here in Kingston, supporting our own family, our friends, our neighbors, the people that we know. And that makes a huge difference.
Council is formally pushing back against the province's plans to amalgamate conservation authorities across Ontario. At a recent meeting, council passed a motion affirming strong support for the continued independence of the Cataraqui Conservation Authority, an organization that plays a key role in protecting local watersheds, wetlands, shorelines, and biodiversity across the region. The motion was moved by Councillor Gary Osteroff, who highlighted the CCA's long track record of local expertise, fiscal responsibility, and accountability to the communities it serves.
You know, we're sounding the alarm that this is quite a change for us. And so when you're on the board and you see what's happening, it causes alarm. And to have been chair and been involved as deeply as I have for my entire time on council, it's been nothing but inspiring for me to be part of this organization that is incredibly financially good steward of what we've been given. And when you think about what we do in the flood forecasting and the stormwater and everything that is handled, it doesn't get done at a better price. So I just think that we have to be really careful to make these changes, and we just want to bring it to light, and hopefully we are able to make some suggestions and inputs that our government would be listening to.
Beyond environmental protection, the CCA provides essential services including flood forecasting and warnings, drinking water source protection, environmental education, and the management of conservation areas valued by residents. Councillor Don Amos, who seconded the motion, also raised concerns about the province's direction.
Environmental protection is not a one-size-fits-all, and this feels like a Toronto, once again, issue that is being now doled out to the whole province. And the main crux from my observation is that two CAs or conservation authorities, two CAs sit in certain municipalities or one municipality, and there seems to be communication and confusion when they have three people sitting together trying to figure out land use planning. And when you get in the minister's ear or the premier's ear about issues, sometimes a full sweep seems to happen. And this, in my observation, this has come into play again. Making five CAs come together to make one massive one on the Eastern region, or the St. Lawrence, if they're calling it that, the St. Lawrence region, is not going to bode well. Right now, this council can call up anyone in the conservation authority, have a direct conversation with a staff member. That staff member would know precisely where the counselor is talking about of concern and can help address that matter. This goes to a regional aspect. The St. Lawrence Conservation Authority, of what they're proposing, could be housed in Ottawa, could be housed in Cornwall, wherever. And now we're reaching out. The board has hinted that it could be 70 members strong. Good heavens, good luck in making a decision on that. There is no way that service levels and community values can happen and go through this when you create a size of a conservation authority of this magnitude. There will be no, from my observations, fiscal responsibility. When you have a forced amalgamation and back office integration, sometimes it works, most times it doesn't, because it's forced. It's not two collaborations coming together. It's an overbody that is saying you will do this. And most times that doesn't end well for anybody, and except the taxpayer ends up paying more. Right now, the city of Kingston is roughly 50% of the conservation authority's budget. We are the largest municipality in that realm. Hence, we have four counselors that sit on that board of directors. But I can say wholeheartedly, GM Ellingwood and his team are fiscally responsible. They are doing what they need to do to support the region in anything from land use patterns to environmental risks. And that's because of the relationships that we have built through this council. And I don't see that happening going to a larger entity.
During discussion, several councillors emphasized that amalgamation risks weakening local decision-making. Councillor Brandon Tozo spoke to this alongside other concerning trends in decisions made by the province.
Who's asking for this? Like, who is asking to take away local authority over conservation, make one several larger authorities? Like, where's the advocacy that has been done at a local level for this? I'm reading through the information report earlier was infuriating. Like, each CA has different policies, they have different processes, they have different staffing. Of course they do, because they're dealing with different environmental considerations. And I think we've seen time and time again this government reduce the power of conservation authorities. And I think that this is just another way to further reduce local control and local decision-making over conservation, something that is, we are stewards of the environment for the next generation. This is just absolutely infuriating. I hate the fact that this government, on the big things that we're advocating for, ignores us, and on the little things where we have some degree of say, takes it away. It's just, yeah, this is a lump of coal in Doug Ford's stocking, if I could do it.
Councillors Vincent Shinani and Gregory Ridge also added that opposition isn't just coming from council chambers.
I've actually spoken to a bunch of constituents who actually approached me to talk to me about this and how concerned they were. So, you know, voters are concerned about this, like greatly. It's not just a few people that approach me. So I think it's really important that we keep this local and smaller so that we can make better decisions.
I've had a number of constituents reach out to me to advocate for something like this before the agenda was presented, and so I'm very glad to see that it's here. I do also remind those constituents that this is ultimately a decision that will be made by the province, encourage them to reach out to the member of provincial parliament, in this case, Mr. Hsu. But at our own level, in terms of an advocacy piece, I think this is important to make our position very clear.
The motion also directs the city to formally share its position with the premier, relevant provincial ministers, local MPPs, the Katarakaway Conservation Authority, and municipalities across the watershed, encouraging others to voice similar support. At their last meeting, council supported a motion advocating for provincial support on the Kingston Health Sciences Center redevelopment project. Kingston Health Sciences Center is the largest acute care and cancer center in southeastern Ontario, serving more than 500,000 residents across the region. The proposed KHSC redevelopment project includes a major rebuild of the aged Kingston General Hospital site and the Cancer Centre of Eastern Ontario. The motion put forward by Councillor Connie Glenn advocates to the Province of Ontario for the prioritization and full funding of the project and requests the support of neighbouring municipalities across southeastern Ontario for a unified regional voice. This motion also comes as the province is currently consulting Ontarians about their 2026 budget priorities. Glenn made her case before council.
The timing of this motion is absolutely critical. So right now, the provincial government is moving forward with making decisions on capital expenditures. And unfortunately, we're in a position where our hospital is moving to being on life support itself. We've had situations where just a few weeks ago, there was flooding in the hospital, creating a delay in surgeries and cancellations of surgeries for an entire day. This is not simply Kingston's hospital. Kingston's hospital is a regional hospital. And so the outreach to the neighboring communities as well as neighboring MPPs is critical in moving this forward. So we take in patients from the borders of Toronto all the way through to Cornwall and then north up through Smith Falls and that entire area. So if our hospital does not continue to function as fully as possible, we are going to see care that decreases, and we are going to potentially see some really unfortunate events. I don't want to catastrophize here because I know that we have a great medical team over there that will do their utmost to provide care for people, but they need the facilities and the infrastructure. So the project that has been proposed, as many of us are aware, is a four-phase project, but we need to get phase one underway immediately because phase one contains monies that would help support the current hospital. So this would help with ensuring that the current site can replace its emergency power systems so that power doesn't go out in the hospital. Fire systems need to be upgraded. We need to make sure that we don't get flooding anymore so that we don't delay surgeries that people critically need to move on. The other part of this phase one funding is for site preparation so that we can move ahead with actually building that new hospital that this area so critically needs. So I'm hopeful that everybody here sees the absolute urgency of passing this motion and getting the provincial government to understand that the need is greater than just Kingston itself. It is Eastern Ontario. Eastern Ontario deserves to have a hospital facility that is top drawer. We have great staff. The hospital has worked very diligently the last couple of years to increase its staff complement, to bring in new physicians, nurses, so that we can provide the care that everyone needs. So let's give them a facility that's worthy of the care that everyone here in the community needs. And let's urge the government to put this up on the top of their priority list in terms of capital expenditures moving forward for the next year so that we can all make sure that our friends, family, and community are well taken care of.
With unanimous support from Council, the call for support in improving care across the region has been sent. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the week. There are multiple weather warnings in effect for Monday, December 29th, including but not limited to warnings for rainfall, wind, and freezing rain, with the freezing rain warning being the most dangerous of the bunch. Kingston is predicted to get up to 15 millimeters of freezing rain Sunday into Monday. So it's going to be slick. Travel conditions are going to be very dangerous, even if the temperature is actually hovering around the 0 degree mark. Please avoid travel unless absolutely necessary. And if you are on the road, take the required precautions. Tuesday, December 30th, temperatures drop right back down, -9, with possibly 3 to 6 centimeters of snow ending Tuesday evening. Wednesday, December 31st, New Year's Eve, another 2 to 4 centimeters of snow falling with a daytime high of -8 and a bone-chilling low of -17. Thursday, January 1st, the first day of the new year, is going to be cold with the remnants of midweek snow still on the ground, possibly another 2 to 4 centimeters falling on January 1st. Friday, January 2nd, we're out of the run of nasty weather here in the city of Kingston. Daytime high of -7 with partly sunny conditions. Overnight low of -12, feeling closer to -13. Saturday, January 3rd, daytime high of -8, overnight low of -16 with sunny conditions. Sunday, January 4th, daytime high of -7, low of -11. And then moving into the start of next week, Monday, January 5th, daytime high of -4 with a 76% chance of light snowfall in the forecast. This is the City of Kingston Traffic Report for the week. As a reminder, winter traffic parking restrictions are in effect as of December 1st. This means that during December and March, overnight on-street parking will be banned only if the weather and conditions require it, so if it's particularly snowy or icy. But during January and February, all overnight on-street parking is banned, no matter the weather conditions. It is a short list of road closures this week. Aberdeen William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street Princess 2 Mac is also closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Berry Street Queen to Colborne is closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street.
And then in terms of other delays, Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Cataraqui Woods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect those same delays for flood proofing, traffic reduced to one lane in each direction. And Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
This is Christina coming back in with your community events calendar for this week. Starting with Monday, December 29th, easing into the final days of the year. If singing is your stress relief, karaoke kicks off early at Timeout Bar at 6 p.m. Trivia fans have options all night long with One Eye Jacks at 7, Brass Pub at 7:45, and Something in the Water at 8. Moving into Tuesday, December 30th, the Kingston Public Market is open all day in Springer Market Square from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. A chance to stock up before New Year's Eve. In the afternoon, Indigenous drumming at Trellis HIV and Community Care starts at 1 p.m. Later that evening, things turn social with Euchre at Daft Brewing at 7 p.m. alongside Jack's Tuesday Night Trivia at 7 p.m. Wednesday, December 31st, New Year's Eve, Kingston is packed with options. Celebrations start early with Retro New Year's Eve at 6 p.m. at Grizz, or a New Year's Eve dinner at Hotel Wolf Island starting at 4 p.m. As the night rolls on, you've got the New Year's Eve party at Coven starting at 7, the New Year's Eve dance party with The Change at Shorelines Casino at 9, and a new Queer's Eve celebration at Daft Brewing at 10 p.m. Wild Wings Kingston will also be hosting Dancing Through the Decades starting at 10, and The Merchant rings in the New Year at 10:30 p.m. Plenty of ways to celebrate. Stepping into Thursday, January 1st, the Kingston Public Market is open again from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Trivia returns in the evening with Riverhead at 7, the Grad Club at 8, and Queet's Pub at 9, while karaoke takes over Tiernanog at 9. On Friday, January 2nd, we have trivia at Wild Wings Kingston starting at 7, followed by country karaoke at The Buckle starting at 9, and regular karaoke at Daft Brewing also starting at 9. On Saturday, January 3rd, another market day at Springer Market Square from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and a New Year's Eve celebration at the square from 1 to 3, perfect for families who want a daytime way to mark the season. To finish off the week on Sunday, January 4th, late night karaoke starts at the Toucan at 10:30 p.m. That wraps up just some of the events Kingston has to offer this week. For our full events listings, you can visit cfrc.ca. Now let's dive into a few concerts on CFRC's concert calendar coming up this week. Tonight at the Broom Factory, Alan Cross takes the stage at 7:30 p.m., a treat for anyone who loves history, music, and storytelling. Live jazz also starts off at Musiki at 8 p.m., a perfect low-key way to ease into the week. On Tuesday, December 30th, Roots Tuesdays continue at the Holiday Inn featuring Tegan McLaren starting at 5 p.m. Over at the Timeout Bar, Paula Wood and friends take over at 6 p.m., while Tom's Tuesday Afternoon Happy Hour Jam runs at the RCHA at 7 p.m. There will also be an open mic night at Musiki kicking off at 7. On Wednesday, December 31st, New Year's Eve, you can get an early start at the Hotel Wolf Island with Hugh Christopher Brown, Jason Mercer, and Joey Wright playing at 4 p.m., followed later by DJ Great White at 10 to keep the party going. Old Gravel Road and Chris Jackson ring in the night at the Mansion starting at 6, while Dan Curtis Band teams up with DJ T-Mac at Spearhead Brewery at 7 p.m. At The Buckle, Jay Smith, Lucas Oak, and Spencer Green hit the stage at 8, and Guilty Pleasures will be at Timeout Bar also at 8. The Trevor Walsh Band will play Tiernanog at 9, while Hattrick takes over the RCHA also at 9, so plenty of choices to ring in the new year. Thursday, January 1st, New Year's Eve Levy at the RCHA starting at 1 p.m., a relaxed way to ease into 2026. On Friday, January 2nd, the music ramps back up with Happy Hour TGIF running at the RCHA at 4, followed by Cameron Wyatt of Casador at the Coven at 5. Later that night, the Complete Unknowns take the RCHA stage at 8. On Saturday, January 3rd, one of the busiest nights of the week, Jeff Callery returns to the Coven at 5, while Al Lerman plays Montes at 6:30. Heatwave will also be playing the RCHA at 8. Later on in the evening, the Oreos hit the Merchant at 10:30 p.m. Finally, wrapping up the week, on Sunday, January 4th, Wind Down with Eric and Megan at the Coven at 1 p.m. Once again, those are just a few concerts coming up in Kingston this week. For our full concert listings, be sure to visit our website at cfrc.ca.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office and supported by our friends at Modern City Taxi, we're pleased to present a single from Westport-based artist Resonant Transitions, a.k.a. Ken Little's debut album, Hearken Organum. The new album was recorded at the Spire and captures Ken's unique composition and playing style, bringing new sounds with cymbals, gongs, and percussion instruments. Stay tuned for tickets to Ken's album release concert taking place at the Spire on November 16th. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Hearken Organum now on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it called Rejoinder here with us on CFRC 101.9 FM.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
Hi, and welcome back to Cuban Sounds in Canada. I'm Karen Dubinsky. It's almost New Year's Eve. On this episode, we're going to play some of the songs you might have heard if you had been hanging around Toronto's Lula Lounge a couple of decades ago. Lula Lounge opened in 2002 on Dundas Street in Toronto. It signaled the cultural maturity of Toronto's Latino community, including, of course, the Cuban community. Lula was the brainchild of the Ecuadorian artist José Ortega and his Colombian real estate developer friend José Neves. When the two friends outgrew the regular parties they threw in their apartments in a building that was owned by Neves, they decided to take a risk and open a club in a nearby building on Dundas Street West. Two decades later, Lula remains a community hub. Lula's programmers really stressed musical originality. José Ortega told me in an interview, "When we opened up as Lula, all of these musicians showed up. There were more bands than we realized. Most were cover bands. We really wanted to support them to make original music. We wanted them to come up with their own experiences as immigrants living in a new country, in a new part of the world. We always encourage bands to add original music to their set list. And so this created a kind of a space for the bands to have a fresh audience that would react to them and they could try out new things. Right away, there was a lot of new material." Journalist Matt Galway declared in 2002 that Toronto's thriving Latin music scene was, quote, "as close to the real thing as you can get without climbing onto a plane." Some of that new material made its way to a CD entitled Lula Lounge Essential Tracks. Most of the musicians who were on it, not surprisingly, were Cuban. We'll start with Yanni Burrell. He's from Camagüey, and he began his professional career at age 17. He arrived in Toronto in 2004. He's considered one of the best exponents of modern-day salsa. He still performs at Lula Lounge. This track is an original composition. It's called Latinos.
Vamos, mi gente, con la clave. Ahora
Vocalist Alberto Alberto came to Canada in 2000. He began singing at the age of 5 in his home province of Matanzas and enrolled briefly in one of Havana's best art schools. Then he got a phone call from legendary pianist Chucho Valdez inviting him to sing with his group Irakare. Chucho had seen Alberto on a TV singing contest. This was his big break in Cuba. Here's a cut from his 2006 album, Trago de Todo, I Bring Everything. The song is called Toronto Tiene Su Cosa, Toronto Has Its Thing. If you listen closely, you'll hear a great lesson in Toronto's musical history. Shout-outs to old venues like the Cerveceria and people like the late Billy Bryans, the Canadian drummer who did much to open the doors to Cuban musicians in Canada. Fuentes brothers are twins from Artemisa, Cuba. They've been in Canada for a while, since the 1990s. They're better known now in their careers as soloists. Adonis Fuentes is in Victoria, and Alex Fuentes, better known now as Alex Cuba, he's in Smithers, BC. We heard from Alex on our first episode. He's a very well-known, award-winning voice in Canadian music. We'll hear from Adonis next time. He has a new album out. This song, written and arranged by the Puentes brothers in 2000, is called Oye Rumberito.
Never mind. Thank you very much.
Episodes ago, we heard a new song from Yeti Asajin, recorded under the name Lady Yutunde from her 2023 album, Africa Libre. Here's an earlier iteration of Yeti, recorded under the name Lady Son. Yeti is a Nigerian-Canadian percussionist who studied in Cuba and continues to make beautiful music in Toronto. This song is called Cántame Sonera, which she wrote and arranged in collaboration with Jay Danley.
Siempre marcha, donde la gente siempre marcha.
Son Ache has a long history in Toronto. The band has performed for decades under different names and with different members. What's consistent is their focus on Son Montuno, a traditional sound that comes from the mountains of eastern Cuba. This song is called Aprovechame.
¿Cómo? ¿Qué cosa tiene la vida? Este mundo está caliente, entre celos y mentiras. ¿Cómo ha cambiado la mente? El chisme de la vecina, el precio en la gasolina. Si no es con malas noticias, este mundo no camina.
Para Guate, que me voy a amanecer.
Ley, 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 ley.
Para Guate, que me voy a amanecer.
Ley, 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 ley. ¿Qué pasó en el Medio Oriente?
Para Guate, que me voy a amanecer.
Para echando con mi gente hasta el amanecer.
We'll end with a song by Luisito Orbegoso and Modo Eterno. Orbegoso is a Peruvian-Canadian percussionist trained at George Brown College who's been a fixture at Lula Lounge since the beginning. This song is called Mi Mambo Pide Campana. Incidentally, if you want to know more about this era of Cuban music in Toronto, there are two episodes of the Cuban Serenade podcast dedicated to the history of Lula Lounge. It's available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Hello, Kingston. CFRC 101.9 FM's annual funding drive is now underway and running through December 31st. Please consider donating today and help support local and earn the chance to win some amazing CFRC prizes. For every $5 you donate, donors also earn one more ticket for each of our weekly raffle draws running in December featuring prizes from wonderful local businesses, including Gray Malkin's Wireworks, McKinnon Brothers Brewing, Old Farm Fine Foods, The Screening Room, Skin Fusion Spa, Smokes Poutinerie, Paul Randolph Jewelers, Terra Natural Foods, Wit, and Thousand Islands Cruises. Enjoy the benefits of donating and help CFRC continue to be the longest-running campus radio station in Canada. Donate today via CFRC.ca.